It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Did Mike Flynn ever discuss lifting sanctions in any of those conversations? Do you know?
I talked to General Flynn yesterday, and the conversations that took place at that time were not in any way related to new U.S. sanctions against Russia or the expulsion of diplomats.
All right, so that's how it started, and that was with Chris Wallace and Vice President Pence. And this is Sandy Rios in the morning, by the way. Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, the president's defense expert, the one who sits by him, whispers in his ear, his chief counselor on intelligence issues, resigned last night, probably after you turned the television off or went somewhere else. Actually, it caught me by mistake. I had my by surprise. I watched Fox News earlier, and honestly, I had said to myself, he will not resign. The president will not accept his resignation. He will not ask him to leave. He will be there in the morning. Because Jennifer Griffin actually gave us some details last night before the resignation. Let's listen to her report.
A senior West Wing source tells Fox News National Security Advisor Mike Flynn met with Vice President Mike Pence this morning and apologized for telling him that sanctions were not discussed in a phone call with the Russian ambassador in December that coincided with the expulsion of 35 Russian spies and the imposition of sanctions in the wake of Russia's interference with the U.S. election. The backtracking followed revelations that there may be transcripts of FBI intercepted phone calls. According to this White House official, the vice president accepted Flynn's apology. The White House press corps did not ask about Flynn's status at today's press conference with the Canadian prime minister, his first press availability since news reports surfaced that Flynn could be fired. There was little public support from White House officials this weekend, fueling the notion that Flynn's job could be on the line.
That's a question that I think you should ask the president. General Flynn has served his country admirably. He's a three-star general. He's head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, and I look forward to having more discussions about this in the future.
Flynn was supposed to be the keynote speaker tonight at a special operations banquet. He canceled his appearance on Sunday. Flynn was with the president all weekend at Mar-a-Lago, overseeing the visit of the Japanese prime minister and the response to North Korea. House Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi called for Flynn's removal. Quote, this administration has exhausted its excuses. Vladimir Putin's grip on President Trump must be investigated, exposed, and broken. National security demands that General Flynn be fired immediately.
The president had a two-hour meeting with Flynn this morning in which, I'm told, he turned to Flynn and asked his advice on various national security issues. This West Wing official told me the president and vice president were not happy, but he is not going to be gone by the end of the week. Kellyanne Conway said this afternoon that Flynn, quote, has the full confidence of President Trump. The decision will ultimately come down to one person, Brett, President Trump.
Okay, so that's what I heard, the last bit of news I heard last night before. That was Jennifer Griffin of Fox, by the way, before I tuned out last night and then had the television running. And when I woke up later, realized that General Flynn had issued his resignation. Now, Donald Trump, the president, did not fire him, did not ask him to leave, but he resigned. And here's kind of the narrative. We're going to talk about this a great deal. In fact, I have to tell you before I even start, my inbox is flooded this morning. I'm getting constant information, and some of it I haven't even had a chance to read, so I'm going to read it to you as I read it to myself. But General Flynn, this is the narrative. Donald Trump is very close to the Russians, and he is too cozy with them, and Vladimir Putin is a murderous killer, and somehow the Russians then took over our elections, and they were the reason that Donald Trump won. So now his National Security Advisor Michael Flynn is reportedly in conversations with the Russian ambassador leading up to during the transition time after Donald Trump's been elected and Michael Flynn's been appointed to be the National Security Advisor. He has conversations with the Russian ambassador in which they discuss the sanctions that the lame duck, nearly out of office, Barack Obama put in place because Barack Obama said the Russians had interfered with our elections, the inference being, of course, that Donald Trump only won because the Russians interfered with our elections. That's what Nancy Pelosi just referred to in that clip. So this is what, this is the narrative. And so we're going to talk in a second, David Goldman, who is in New York City's national security writer, an expert about all these things. He's going to join us, and I'm going to ask David what he thinks is behind this. I already know what he's going to say, and I think you're going to find it intriguing. But I've been telling you now for the last few weeks that there is turmoil in the White House, that there are competing forces, and some of them are subversive from my perspective. Michael Flynn has a stellar history, especially, and I'm going to let David Goldman get into that more. But he's a hardliner when it comes to national security and Islamism. And so some feel that Iran has had a victory here because Michael Flynn has been a real opponent of the Iran deal, of the interest and influence of the Islamists in the Obama White House. Remember that Michael Flynn was fired by Barack Obama because of some of the things he did. And again, we're going to get into that with David Goldman. But one of the most interesting things I read this morning was an article in The Washington Post. And I find this really interesting. They are the outlet that first let us know that, well, you know what, Michael Flynn, we had recordings of those conversations that he had with the Russian ambassador. And this is what they said. Now, you just wonder, how did the Washington Post get, how in the world did they get hold of, like, conversations between the national security advisor for the president and the Russian ambassador? Isn't that a little odd? Well, we're going to talk about that. So here's the story from the Washington Post. The acting attorney general, remember Sally Yates, the one that was fired by President Trump because she told the members of the Justice Department, her employees, not to enforce Donald Trump's immigration rules. Remember that, Sally? She's the acting director. Okay, so this is who it's talking about. Well, now we find out from the Washington Post that she is, after all, a hero. And I'll tell you why. The acting attorney general informed the Trump White House late last month that she believed Michael Flynn had misled senior administration officials about the nature of his communications with the Russian ambassador to the United States and warned that the national security advisor was potentially vulnerable to Russian blackmail. All right, so they go from Michael Flynn is sort of it's inferred that he's kind of a too friendly with Russia because he talked to the Russian ambassador about the sanctions, and he said he didn't talk to them about the sanctions. There's being much made about him lying to Mike Pence. I'm not in favor of lies, but I would imagine that the former National Intelligence, the former director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, sometimes when you do spy work and undercover, and sometimes when you're president, you don't want everyone to know everything that you say. It's probably not a good idea. So if you don't want to, I do take truth-telling literal. But if you are in that business, you have to be willing. So I'm not shocked. There's nothing to be shocked about that he didn't say that in the transition period when Barack Obama had just slapped on sanctions to the Russians because of their alleged involvement in U.S. elections, that Michael Flynn might actually talk to them about that because Donald Trump was going to be president in about 2 weeks. There's nothing shocking about that. There's nothing illegal in that, by the way, but let me go on. So now we find out later in this Washington Post article, in the waning days of the Obama administration, James R. Clapper Jr., who was the director of National Intelligence, and John Brennan, the CIA director at the time, shared Yates' concerns, that's Sally Yates, who was fired later, and concurred with her recommendation to inform the Trump White House. They feared that Flynn had put himself in a compromising position and thought that Pence had a right to know that he'd been misled. And on it, the conspiracy web just gets spun. John Brennan, the guy that we think has been reported converted to Islam when he was stationed in Saudi Arabia, John Brennan, who voted for the Communist Party USA candidate in the 80s for president, that John Brennan? I'm just wondering. I think it's the same John Brennan. And so this was in the conversations took place during the presidential transition in 2016. In a February 8th interview with the Washington Post, Flynn categorically denied discussing sanctions with Russia, Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak. Can you imagine him not wanting to tell the Washington Post the details of his conversation? I just can't imagine. Wouldn't he just spill his heart and his guts to the Washington Post? I think not. So Flynn categorically denied it. Two officials said a main topic of the relevant call was the sanctions. And so on, let's see. So here they go back and forth about whether they should tell. They have the transcripts. They've eavesdropped on the call. And they've shed it around, spread it around. So John Brennan knows, and they're meeting with the president. Remember, these two men are meeting with the president every day, giving him his briefings. And remember, these briefings continue to be leaked. Remember when President Trump kind of set them up to find out who the leaker was? So they know that there are transcripts of Michael Flynn's conversation, but they don't tell President Trump. Because I don't know. I read in here that FBI Director James Comey initially opposed notifying the president, citing concerns that it would complicate the agency's investigation. And so you see how this goes. You see how this goes. So what's the truth here? Let me read to you these things that I told you I haven't had a chance to read, but this is a little rundown here. This is from the New York Times. Stephen K. Bannon, the president's chief strategist, asked for Mr. Flynn's resignation, a move that he's been pushing for since Friday when it became clear that the advisor had misled Mr. Pence. At around 8:20 Monday, a sullen Mr. Flynn was seen in the Oval Office just as preparations were being made for the swearing-in of a newly confirmed Treasury Secretary. One person close to the administration who was not authorized to discuss the personnel moves and spoke on the condition of anonymity said that retired Vice Admiral Robert S. Harward is the leading candidate to replace Mr. Flynn. It's actually going to be a Mr. Kellogg now. Okay, so that's that. Again, this is Wall Street Journal. This is a little excerpt that I've been sent. But now come reports that National Security Advisor Mike Flynn talked about sanctions with Russia's ambassador to the U.S. before the inauguration. Mr. Flynn denied it, and Mr. Pence made the case in public on his behalf. But media reports claim that intelligence sources who monitored the conversation say they did discuss sanctions. All right, so then this goes over to the Wall Street Journal, another article. While the president is at it, how about asking if the spooks listening to Mr. Flynn obeyed the law? Mr. Flynn is a retired general who ran the Defense Intelligence Agency, so surely he knows that his December 29th call to the Russian ambassador Sergei Kislyak would be subject to electronic surveillance. U.S. intelligence services routinely get orders from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court to monitor foreign officials. But under U.S. law, when they get those orders, they are supposed to use minimization procedures that don't let them listen to the communications of Americans who may be caught in such eavesdropping. That is, they are supposed to protect the identity and speech of innocent Americans. Yet the Washington Post, which broke the story, says it spoke to multiple U.S. officials claiming to know what Mr. Flynn said on that call. The questions someone in the White House should ask the NSA is why it didn't use minimization procedures to protect Mr. Flynn. Or did it also have a court order to listen to Mr. Flynn? And how did it justify that judicial request? If Mr. Flynn was under U.S. intelligence surveillance, then Mr. Trump should know why. But at this point, so should the American public. Maybe there's an innocent explanation, but the Trump White House needs to know what's going on with Mr. Flynn and U.S. spies. And that brings us to our next guest, who says that this is sort of a coup on the part of the CIA, formerly led by John Brennan, to destroy Michael Flynn for the reasons he's going to lay out. It's pretty interesting, so stay tuned. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio.
You know, we've been leading these tours to Washington, D.C. for almost 20 years, and we've never had a response like we've had this year. We're going to fill up early for both our June and our September Spiritual Heritage Tours. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will be our historian, and he'll be commenting all along the way, taking your questions and interacting with the group. We're going to be going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown as well on a separate tour that just precedes the Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon Spiritual Heritage Tour. So, if you'd like to go on one or both of these trips, you can find out all the information, all the details at the website spiritualheritagetours.com. Spiritualheritagetours.com. 2017 may be your year to join us on one of these spiritual heritage tours.
Truth Be Told with Nate Kellum, Chief Counsel at the Center for Religious Expression.
CRE recently filed a federal lawsuit on behalf of a Christian evangelist who is banned from speaking on a public sidewalk near a public university. Rodney Keister, a traveling missionary, peacefully passed out gospel tracts and spoke to passersby on a public sidewalk near the University of Alabama. However, campus police soon ordered him to cease his expression or face arrest, as the university viewed the sidewalk as their property, where Keister could not speak without obtaining permission 10 days in advance. The First Amendment guarantees the right to speak on public sidewalks, even if they pass by or through a public university campus. There must always be room for speech.
Truth Be Told from the Center for Religious Expression, clearing the path for truth. Hear more at CRELaw.org, CRELaw.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. How would you like to finish your degree online? Truett McConnell University makes that possible with their top-notch online program. You can even earn a master's in theology. For 70 years, Truett McConnell University has been preparing students to fulfill God's high calling on their lives, on campus or online. A degree that can not only change your life, but also your workplace. Truett.edu is the website. That's Truett.edu. The tolerance and diversity crowd is on a rampage at Yale University, this time over the name of Calhoun College. The school is named in honor of John C. Calhoun, a 19th century statesman from South Carolina. He was also a supporter of slavery, and that led a politically correct mob to demand Yale erase Mr. Calhoun from the school's history. And Yale was more than welcome to oblige, announcing they will rename Calhoun College in honor of Grace Murray Hopper. Miss Hopper, a trailblazing computer scientist and Navy Rear Admiral. It's yet another example of liberals whitewashing American history. Slavery was an ugly, sinful stain on American history. We cannot pretend it did not exist. George Washington owned slaves. So did Thomas Jefferson. Does the far left recommend renaming Washington, D.C. or shutting down the University of Virginia? I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you, and remind you that we are helping India partners this week to get little girls in India out of the sex trade slavery, sometimes as young as eight. They are put in these blue light districts or red light districts, and some of them are even born there. So it's wretched conditions, and India Partners is in the business of getting these girls out, educating them, cleaning them up, and giving them just a glimpse of what life can be out of that lifestyle. It only costs $7 a day to provide a day of safety, rescue, and care for these little girls. And if you would like to help, just think of what you can afford and multiply it by seven, because that gives just one day. And the way you do that is call 877-616-2396, 877-616-2396, or you can go online to AFR.net, AFR.net. And it's funny, you know, we're talking about Michael Flynn, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, former National Security Advisor. These things are important, and they're important to me. I follow them religiously. But honestly, the change of life that we offer for these little girls, the recognition of who God is and that He can forgive and redeem and cleanse all of us, is a much larger message. And so sometimes I may make it sound like it's not as important, but it is. It's front and center. It transcends really all of the things that we deal with that although they are important, they are not of eternal significance. My next guest is David Goldman. And David knows a lot about this situation with Lieutenant General Flynn. David is an economist, interesting to me, a music critic. We probably won't have time to talk about that part. But he has a series of essays called The Spangler Column on PJ Media and also in Asian Times. And this one caught my eye for sure today. It says, and I've been teasing you about it in the opening segment as we talked about General Flynn, that the CIA really is out to get General Flynn. David, good morning, and thank you for joining me.
Good morning, Sandy. It's a pleasure. Actually,
yeah.
It's not a good morning, but it's still a pleasure to talk to you.
No, it isn't a good morning, and this is not good news. You know, General Flynn has been not that this makes him a good guy, but he has been a guest on the show, and I've had conversations with him. He is a true American hero. And actually, before we jump into this, I've been discussing this morning his resignation and some of the details of it. Could you just give people an idea of why I'm putting words in your mouth, but I'm assuming that you have great admiration for him, and why do you?
Well, Flynn was the only person in the entire Obama Defense Department who stood up and blew the whistle on the incompetence and deception of the administration in managing the Syrian civil war. Remember, half a million people have died, and 10 million have become homeless as a result of the civil war. A good deal of that is due to the bungling of American intervention, particularly by the Central Intelligence Agency, which put a huge amount of resources into Islamic radicals, Sunnis, whom they thought they could direct against the Assad government, which is Shiite Islam. And the result was to help really stand godfather to the birth of ISIS as a radical movement. Flynn, who was then the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, that's the Pentagon's branch of the intelligence community, warned about this very vocally, and for that he was fired. He's a truth teller, he's a patriot, and he stood up to the whole rest of the bureaucracy and put his career on the line. That's an extraordinarily career and officer, very rare. And whatever else he may have done wrong, and I just simply don't know the facts here, I think we owe him a huge debt of gratitude for his service and his courage.
You know, I've actually had friends in D.C. who are national security experts say to me that the generals who survived the Obama 8 years, who are still serving, are serving because they made compromises. And that that means hardly anybody stood up the way General Flynn did. And I won't say nobody did because I don't know. But you are right. He's an uncommon man in that situation.
Very few people stand up in a bureaucracy and will sacrifice their career for the truth. It simply doesn't happen every day. Flynn is an extraordinary man. And for that reason, I think that the rest of the intelligence community, the Central Intelligence Agency in particular, really didn't like him at all because he went out of his way to hold their errors and incompetence up to public light and humiliate them. So I think they did have it in for him.
Another thought occurs to me. You know who else is probably really ticked at him? I'm thinking John McCain. This is just because John McCain is the one who kept going on television telling us about these good Syrians, our friends, our allies, and was all about sending weapons and supplies to the good Syrians. And we know now from many others, not just Michael Flynn, but others writing and knowing about the region, that we were not helping good Syrians. We ended up giving weapons to what, as you said, became ISIS. But back to the CIA, you make the case in your article that you really think that they, do you have any proof of this? Is this just a feeling? What do we know about that?
No, there are a couple of really outrageous incidents on the record. For example, General Flynn wants to appoint as the senior director for Africa a Pentagon employee named Robin Townley. Townley served with distinction at the Pentagon for 17 years, held the highest level of security clearance at the Pentagon, and was considered by people I consider very competent to be an outstanding performer. The Central Intelligence Agency torpedoed Townley's security clearance and prevented him from joining the National Security Council. This is completely unheard of. In my experience, nothing like this has ever happened before, to have someone who already had a top-level clearance at Pentagon be refused it for the White House. It's simply bureaucratic backstabbing. So I think that's kind of a rocket, fireworks being sent up saying CIA doesn't like General Flynn.
You know, there's a really interesting article in the Washington Post this morning that really, I feel like, kind of gives us a lot of clues, whether they're meant to or not, I don't know, about what went on behind the scenes. And they talk about how James Clapper and John Brennan, who was the CIA director, and Clapper, the head of Defense National Intelligence, DNI, found out about Flynn's conversations with the Russian ambassador. Obviously knew what was said, had seen whatever they did, heard the transcripts, heard the recordings, I don't know what. And they were discussing whether they should tell the Trump White House. And according to this article, it was the head of the FBI. I'm just, names are escaping me in this moment. The current head of the FBI, who said, okay. We can't do that because that would tip them off to our investigation. So these guys all knew about these recordings. They were all chatting about it, but they felt they did not want to tell the White House. Now, they eventually did, and the person that delivered the message was this Sally Yates, who was the one that Trump just fired because she told her Justice Department not to enforce his immigration orders. It's really a tangled intrigue.
Well, I don't think we'll ever know exactly what the details are, but I think a few points are quite clear. The first is, there is nothing at all unusual for an incoming national security advisor to speak to other countries, including to the opposition. It has happened with every administration in the past, and the idea that General Flynn was doing something untoward, let alone illegal, by speaking to the Russian ambassador is completely ridiculous. In 1980, when Ronald Reagan was about to be elected, he had his designated national security advisor, Richard Allen, tell the Iranians that if they didn't release the hostages, which the Iranians had held for 2 years, Reagan would turn their stinking country into a sheet of glass, if I remember the exact words I was told.
Oh, sorry.
I mean, there's nothing new about this. So exactly what transpired is completely opaque to me, and why anyone thinks this an issue is very strange. Now, exactly what Flynn might have said to Vice President Pence, or if he misspoke or misrepresented things, I have no possible way of knowing what happened in the White House, and I make no comment on it, and I mean no criticism of the Trump administration. I don't know what they felt they had to deal with. I don't have the facts. But what's represented in the media is, in my view, nonsensical. We've had a long campaign against Flynn coming from the intelligence community long before this, long before he ever talked to the Russian ambassador. It's a pattern, and the pattern speaks for a very disturbing attitude or action on the part of the intelligence community trying to influence U.S. politics, and that is very illegal.
You know, let me talk to the silliness of this, because I haven't mentioned this yet. They keep saying, and I think it was the Washington Post that first raised this, this is the game. You and I both know how this game is played, but for the average American, they don't, people that listen to my show know a lot, and the people that read your column understand a lot. But the Logan Act of 1799 basically says that, you know, citizens should not be communicating with foreign governments to make deals about national policy. Well, General Flynn is not just a citizen. He was the transitional national security advisor. So even the other outlets are saying nobody's ever been prosecuted, and you can't really apply that statute to him. And yet that's what he violated the 1799 Logan Act, as though it's some...
That's quite right. The Logan Act, as you say, no one's ever been prosecuted under this. It's impossible to prove. As I mentioned, every incoming administration has had discussions with their foreign counterparts. It says that it's illegal to try to influence the conduct of foreign governments in disputes or controversies with the United States or to defeat the measures of the United States. Flynn was doing no such thing. He was exchanging information with the Russian ambassador. So first you have people float the idea that the Logan Act might be invoked. And Sally Yates, of course, who's an Obama holdover, one of the people who tried to sabotage what Trump is doing, tells the White House, we believe the Russians could blackmail Flynn because he broke the law over the Logan Act, which is complete nonsense. But this has been going on for quite some time. Remember, the allegation here is that Flynn is somehow soft on the Russians. Now, if you read Flynn's book, which he wrote together with Michael Ledeen, Flynn is, without any doubt, the hardest liner with respect to the Russians in the Trump administration. There's a spectrum of opinion, and Flynn is definitely on the hard-line side. He thinks the Russians, the North Koreans, Iran, and Syria are all part of a coalition to destroy the United States, and he said so in exactly those words. So he's not soft on the Russians. The hilarious thing is, last November, he was being attacked as too anti-Russian, and it was claimed that he was being paid off by the Turks. That appeared in a commentary magazine, a McCain Republican outlet, which didn't like Flynn. It was a ridiculous story. It got dropped. You have a fake news media which forgets the story it told in November because it contradicts the story it's telling in February because those stories are mutually incompatible. Next, we're going to hear, you know, that Flynn is, a zombie, a Martian, or whatever. It's all completely ridiculous. Now, Flynn may have mismanaged the situation. He may have misspoken. I can't evaluate what the reasons the White House had to encourage his resignation. Perhaps he did do something bureaucratically or politically wrong, but he did nothing wrong criminally or procedurally, if you understand my point.
I do, absolutely. But see, that's the thing. You know, this is the thing. The Washington bubble, the pundits, the punditry, the writers, the chattering class, they are so caught up with process. It's like Trump's immigration orders. It's about they were executed sloppily. So that's the story. Not the orders, not the danger to the country, but the fact that they were executed sloppily or whatever word they use. It is, they come up with the most, they sidetrack us with the silliest things, and I think this Michael Flynn issue is one of those things. David, do you know anything about, they're floating around something, three or four names, Petraeus is one of them. Do you know anything about who might take Michael Flynn's place, and do you have any opinions on that? We just have a couple of minutes left.
I have no information at all, but I think it's extremely likely that the Trump administration will move in a more establishment and less adventurous direction. Ugh.
Maybe John McCain can take his place, because we all know he has such great judgment. That's my editorial remark. David,
that would not be good.
No, it wouldn't. And so what we've got is a confluence of the CIA, led by the former John Brennan, and, you know, the new CIA director, who's just been in there, 1 week, has not had a chance to go in there and clean things up. Some people are laying it at his feet. Again, my names are the new CIA director. They're kind of saying, well, there must be something, or he wouldn't ask for his resignation. I don't even think we can say with certainty that he's responsible for this. I think he's got a whole bureaucracy under him where the wheels were already turning, don't you?
Well, it's very difficult for the CIA director to, in 1 year, even 1 week, drain a swamp which has been festering for a very long time.
Yeah, it's Mike Pompeo, that's the name. I just went blank on that, but he's the current CIA director, newly appointed. David Goldman, it's a pleasure to meet you and to talk to you. And by the way, we'll put your article, The CIA Really Is Out to Get General Flynn, in defense of him. We're going to put this on our Facebook page so people can have a resource. David, I hope to talk to you again. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Sandy. Real pleasure. Thank you.
All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hi. Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. You know, God has allowed us to go all over the country to serve as 8 Days of Hope. We've been to Illinois, New York, Texas, North Carolina, pretty much from coast to coast. And it's so awesome to meet homeowners. They're just so encouraged. I mean, sometimes we rebuild their homes. Other times we put a tarp on the roof or do chainsaw work. We have never charged anybody anything for our services. Very simply, we do it because God commands us to love others just as He loves us. If you're interested in being part of 8 Days of Hope, either with our rapid response team that goes anywhere in the country within 3 to 4 days of a disaster, or in our rebuilding efforts like we did last year in South Carolina, please go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, click Get Involved or Volunteer, and we will notify you anytime God calls us to go and serve those who suffer from disaster. 8daysofhope.com or on Facebook.
Hello, friend. I'm Pastor Ron Jones, and I'm glad to tell you something good has come to American Family Radio. Something Good is a daily half-hour Bible teaching program that I'm hosting at 6:30 p.m. Central Time. In a world full of so much bad news, we're glad to bring you Something Good. Learn more at somethinggoodradio.org. That's somethinggoodradio.org.
EngageMagazine.net has rich articles inviting you into great dialogue for any stage of life. Here's Teddy James.
The things that we value, there's no difference between the generations at all. We value hard work. We value family. We value values. Those things are true across generational lines. We don't want you thinking about Engage. Our heart is to get you to see the heart of God.
Go to EngageMagazine.net and join the discussion.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. 35 years ago, the tenure of a national security advisor to the president was prematurely truncated by a scandal. Ronald Reagan's choice of Richard Allen's successor proved to be one of the most consequential of his presidency. Donald Trump is now facing a similar moment and must make a similar choice. Early in 1982, President Reagan selected a man of extraordinary competence and vision, William P. Clark. Judge Clark helped develop and execute the strategy Mr. Reagan used to defeat his time's existential threat to freedom, namely Soviet communism. President Trump recognizes communism with a god, Sharia supremacism, to be a similar threat to today's America. Like Ronald Reagan, he needs a top hand who has the judgment and ability to staff up and guide a national security team to achieve victory over jihad. Retired Lieutenant General William Jerry Boykin is that man. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. David Goldman, our guest just now, writes as Spangler. That's his like pen name, as Spangler. Essays on PJ Media and the Asia Times. And so a great writer and so I hope that we'll have him on again in the future. But I had to come in. I was going to play a clip, but you know what? Frank is right. Frank Gaffney's commentary was spot on. The perfect person to replace Michael Flynn is General Boykin. General Jerry Boykin, there's just no question in my mind that he has the judgment and the grit and the understanding of the threats and the integrity. He would be an incredible asset. I'm going to jump on that bandwagon And, you know, maybe we can all, you know, if you don't know, you know, how would you do that? You could pray. Because General Boykin really knows the Lord, too. And that's something, that's a voice that's needed in the White House. That would be a fabulous idea. Thank you, Frank, for interjecting that this morning. All right, so leaks. We have leaks in the White House. Oh, you know what? Before I talk about leaks, let me please just take a second to talk about India Partners, because they have been, for 29 years, they've established orphanages, elementary and secondary schools, prison ministries, food for the hungry ministries, hospital, village medical clinics, vocational training, job placement, rescue of children and women from prostitution and sex trafficking, and on it goes, fisheries and livestock projects. They've done all kinds of things. But our goal in helping them this particular winter, this particular February, is to help them get little girls who are being trafficked and sold in the red light areas of Mumbai. And so if this is something that resonates with you, you can call 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396, or you can give online at afr.net. That's afr.net. And by the way, you can still join our petition to President Trump to encourage him to sign that religious liberty executive order that was leaked, and we discussed it at length last week. We have 100,000, over 100,000 signatures, but we need yours too. As many as possible. It is an excellent document. It would give the protections to cake bakers and florists. I don't want to overstate it. I shouldn't overstate it. That's not what it would do. The executive order has to do with the federal contracts and the dealings with the federal government, but it would certainly send the trends, the waves of time, the winds of time back to something normal where people's religious faith is protected in terms of how they implement it in their business and their private life. And so, anyway, if you'd like to sign that, go to afa.net. That's afa.net, and sign our petition to the president. All right, let's see. Which shall I do? You know, I've talked already about leaks, but I want you to hear James Rosen's report, because we have a problem with employees in the federal government. Let's listen.
Most federal workers are good people of varying competence who execute their duties faithfully. But some bureaucrats, as Fox News has reported, are using encryption apps and leaks to try to derail President Trump's policies. Already we've seen leaked transcripts from his calls with heads of state and leaked draft language from his executive orders.
Certainly, we've seen a greater tsunami of leaks at a very earlier stage than we necessarily would have seen in other administrations.
As he surveys the world from the Oval Office, the new president might well imagine himself surrounded by saboteurs. So how can he combat this determined enemy from within? Some allies on Capitol Hill, alarmed by the tempo and sensitivity of the early leaking, want to see criminal prosecutions if possible. Republican Congressman Devin Nunes is chairman of the House Intelligence Committee.
We're going to identify all of these leaks that have occurred over the last 60 days, and we're going to let the FBI know that we want to have an assessment on this.
As documented in Nixon's Back Channel to Moscow, a new study by historian Richard Moss of the U.S. Naval War College, the 37th president and his national security advisor, Henry Kissinger, often circumvented the bureaucracy through secrecy.
I'm not sure that it's possible nowadays. The national security staff that Kissinger had at his disposal was approximately 40 people strong. The current National Security Council is over 400 people.
All right, so that's the first part of James' report. And then he goes on to talk about even some of the other things that federal employees are doing to undermine this president. Let's listen.
President Trump could try speed, implement his policies quickly before bureaucrats can subvert them, but the pitfalls of rushing reforms have already been made plain by his experience with the executive order on immigration.
They rushed it out very quickly. Even they recognized the problems in implementing this. And it created more trouble than dealing with the problem that he was facing.
False flag operations offer another option. WikiLeaks revealed that when Hillary Clinton's campaign manager suspected internal leaks, he asked that a false rumor be planted among the staff about when Clinton would announce her candidacy to see if it would leak and the leaker could be identified, a tactic that President-elect Trump seemed already aware of.
I said, I won't tell anybody. I'm going to have a meeting, and I won't tell anybody about my meeting with intelligence. Nobody knew, not even Rona, my executive assistant for years. She didn't know. I didn't tell her. The meeting was had. The meeting was over. They left. And immediately, the word got out that I had a meeting.
Sources say the White House is aware of its problem with leakers and reviewing ways to combat it, and that the president and his advisors are also mindful of the need to take action that does not itself stray over the line into illegality.
All right, so Houston, we have a problem. We've got people on the inside. We have people in the CIA. We have people colluding at Justice. It sounds like a Director Comey. I'm sorry, I don't have respect for that. I just don't understand. The president has just been there for 30 days, and now suddenly they are, it seems to me, all doing their best to undermine and destroy him. But then, you know, that's what's happening in the streets too. But don't be discouraged, because I have to say that, you know, if you voted for Donald Trump, and, you know, I actually am tempted to say forget Donald Trump, but I don't really mean that. It's the policies. It was the choice of Mrs. Clinton. Just think where we'd be if Mrs. Clinton were the president of the United States today. And thank God she is not. Thank God she is not. And Donald Trump has been doing some wonderful things to secure this country and to put things back in order. And so I don't think people have forgotten that. Not really. They may be intimidated in saying it, because there's, you know, there's so much violent feedback and loud clashing cymbals, banging drums, screeching. But I really don't think the American people, if they're paying attention, and I hope they are, have been persuaded that we should have elected Hillary Clinton. I don't think so. And I think many of us are grateful to Donald Trump for fulfilling his promises. All right. I speaking of leaks, I have to stop and read this article to you. It came out, last Thursday. But this is important, and we're going to put this on our Facebook page, too. It's entitled, House Democrats Compromise American Intelligence Secrets Again. And George Raisley is the author of this from Conservative HQ. And he begins by recapping that story that I have mentioned more than once about Abid Imran and Jamal Awan, who share a house in Lorton, Virginia, and they all do the IT for something like 8 members of Congress, Democrats. They're Muslim. They work for at least 3 members of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence and 5 members of the House Committee on Foreign Affairs. Dozens of members, by the way, share their services. 2 committees deal with many of the nation's most sensitive issues, information and documents, including those related to war with radical Islamic terror. Awan handled IT for Joaquin Castro, a Texas Democrat who serves on both the Intelligence and Foreign Affairs panels. Imran Awan handled IT for Representative Gregory Meeks, senior member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, ranking member of the Subcommittee on Europe, Asia, and Emerging Threats. And I could go on and on. And I had told you that these brothers, for some reason, make incredible salaries, like quadruple what normal staffers make. And now we know that they've been mismanaging the information, maybe stealing some stuff. So last week, the last I heard about this, they were suspended, but still, you know, not fired. And so they have also, their financial dealings are very suspicious. They make a ton of money, the 3 of them. They share a house, and yet they have debts. Their financial records are just terrible. One of them has $1 million in debt. And they buy big cars, and they just, it's a very strange and troubling situation. Debbie Wasserman Schultz was one of the persons, you know, the one whose information was leaked right before the election. So that's that story. Okay. So moving along to make some links here, George says, all of this puts us in mind of something that was revealed after the October 25th, 1983 invasion of Grenada. That was when Ronald Reagan was president. What the Marines found in Grenada was astonishing, as David Horowitz put in his book, The Great Betrayal. The intelligence trove discovered after the invasion of Grenada revealed that Democrats were not just in communication with the communist government there, but the Democratic Representative Ron Dellums and his staff were actively colluding with it. Documents seized show that Dellums had coordinated with his domestic opposition to Reagan's Grenada policy with the communist junta in Grenada, going so far as to provide draft reports for the regime to edit before being published by the House of Representatives. Horowitz describes the materials found in Grenada by the Marines, including a letter from Dellums' chief of staff, Carlotta Scott. The letter to the communist dictator said Dellums was, quote, really hooked on you and Grenada and doesn't want anything to happen to building the revolution and making it strong. The only other person that I know of that he expresses so much admiration for is Fidel. Now, that is Ron Dellums, Democratic, what was his position? He was a Democrat serving in Congress. That was his chief of staff. The only other person that I know of that Dellum expresses such admiration for is Fidel. And George writes, the emissary for these pro-communist efforts to undermine America, who was the emissary, he asked? Who was that? Current Congresswoman Barbara Lee. Quote, another document liberated by the Marines contained the minutes of a Grenadian Politburo meeting attended by the communist dictator and his military command. Barbara Lee is here presently and has brought with her a report on the international airport that was done by Ron Dellums. They have requested that we look at the document and suggest any changes we may deem necessary. They will be willing to make the changes, end quote. That's Horowitz writing in the book The Great Betrayal. Representative Dellums went on to serve as chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, complete with the requisite security clearances. And Barbara Lee? She succeeded Dellums as representative for California's 13th Congressional District and now sits on the State and Foreign Operations and Military Construction and Veterans Affairs subcommittees of the Appropriations Committee and employed, by the way, Awan Abid as her IT professional. So, we have a problem, Houston, a big problem, and we're going to put this article on our Facebook page so that you can share it. House Democrats compromise American intelligence secrets again. I've already been told that this article, some people have tried to post it on Facebook and it's been blocked. So we're going to try this morning. Wonder why? I guess maybe, you know, maybe Mark Zuckerberg, who has such a vast history of knowledge and American security, might think this is fake news. But I guarantee you George Raisley has been around for a long time. He probably knew the characters and the players. And certainly David Horowitz has been around a long time too. So we're going to put that, we're going to try to post that on our Facebook so that you can share it. House Democrats, if you can't, listen to this. Can you remember George Raisley and the title, House Democrats Compromise American Intelligence? If you can remember that, you can find it online and print it out for yourself. Oh, wow. Well, where to go here? I was going to spend some time talking about this accusation that there is no illegal voting. Actually, let's listen at least to one clip between George Stephanopoulos and Stephen Miller on voter fraud. Cut 9.
President Trump again this week suggested in a meeting with senators that thousands of illegal voters were bused from Massachusetts to New Hampshire, and that's what caused his defeat in the state of New Hampshire, also the defeat of Senator Kelly Ayotte. That has provoked a response from a member of the Federal Election Commission, Ellen Weintraub, who says, I call upon the president to immediately share New Hampshire voter fraud evidence so that his allegations may be investigated promptly. Do you have that evidence?
I've actually, having worked before on a campaign in New Hampshire, I can tell you that this issue of busing voters into New Hampshire is widely known by anyone who's worked in New Hampshire politics. It's very real. It's very serious. This morning on this show is not the venue for me to lay out all the evidence, but I can tell you this. Voter fraud is a serious problem in this country. You have millions of people who are registered in two states or who are dead or who are registered to vote, and you have 14% of non-citizens, according to
14%. That's a, you know what, we're going to have to replay that. I want to put that whole exchange because he chewed George Stephanopoulos up on that issue and on many others. Stephen Miller, we'll put that whole exchange on our Facebook page, and hopefully I'll have time to come back to it, maybe even tomorrow. All right. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family